Hey, boys and girls, welcome back to the Marvel Bronze Age.
Ah, the good old Bronze Age.
This is episode 13 of season 2, and I am Ed. Are you going to introduce yourself? Okay. Well, I guess we're going to have to start over, because if you're speaking, I cannot hear you. Although I did hear your microphone crack and pop, so maybe it had something to do with that.
Can you hear me now?
I can now, yes.
Okay. All right. That was interesting.
It popped or something, like you had hit the mic or something, and then I couldn't hear you.
I turned my head.
Maybe you jiggled a wire loose.
Maybe I shouldn't turn my head.
Not quickly, anyways.
Yes. All right. I'm sorry. Go.
Okay.
Go. All right. Go again, man.
We'll try that again.
All right. You're like, are you going to introduce yourself?
And
what was funny was, like, it worked last week. Fine. I'm Levi, and you keep talking, and I'm like, what the hell, dude?
Yeah. Screw with me, will you?
I know. It's like, stop being an ass.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you all right now. All right, let's try the take two.
All right, don't turn your head.
There's the word of the show.
There you go.
The phrase that pays, don't turn your head.
Don't turn your head.
It's like the weeping angels on Doctor Who.
Don't blink.
Everybody, welcome back to the Marvel Bronze Age.
The good old Bronze Age.
I'm Ed.
I am not Ed.
And I'm laughing because we tried this just a minute ago, guys, and it didn't work out well because of technology problems.
Okay, so that's why this seems so familiar. Okay, I thought it was something else entirely. I was like, dude, that damn red pill.
No, it was we're suffering from Deja Tech.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's a good group. They do about 142 to 150 beats per minute.
Yeah, they're all over YouTube.
Yeah, they are. The internets.
The internets, yes, indeed. This is episode 13 of season 2, guys.
13.
We have unlucky number 13, or I don't know. It doesn't make any difference to us, I don't think.
You know, they actually don't label the 13th floor in buildings and elevators.
I've thought that, but, you know, I've never really, like, looked to check.
Well, I mean, you know, living in West Virginia, you don't, like, really visit that many buildings that go up that high. But
that's true. I have had occasion since I was younger, and I think I learned that when I was pretty young. But again, I never think about it when I'm on the elevator. I'm too busy jumping right when it starts and then jumping just as it stops.
Well, when you were younger, weren't they just like developing the technology for like buildings above three stories?
No. See, Henry Ford was building shit all over the place. It's, you know, people just don't realize that. It just didn't get finished until like the 50s and 60s, but he started it. Yeah, that's not a problem.
Oh, okay. I get confused with the multitude of decades that you have under your belt.
Time confuses you, I understand.
It does. It's not actually linear.
No, okay. That's a different show.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
If you talk about clicking your heels, man, I'm cutting you off. Wow, it worked. I didn't even have to do it. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, I was making sure because we had this problem.
I know. I was messing with you.
All right, guys. Two books up this evening for discussion, Avengers issue 75 and Captain America issue 124.
Yes.
Being Bronze Age, both of those will be like the first volume because we're looking at books from back in 1970.
Yes. So. And for those who don't know, we've been doing 1970.
Yes, April. We're in the month of April now, actually.
That's called progress.
So everybody can whip theirs out and – well, they're books, of course, I mean.
Oh, that's, of course, what I thought you meant as well.
Right. Take out your books so you can follow along. No tests. So it's all good.
Yeah. And if there is, it'll be open book.
Yes, of course. So we'll start out with Avengers 75. front cover has the Avengers chasing after Quicksilver.
Mm-hmm.
With Quicksilver coming at us and the Avengers behind.
Right.
With the cityscape behind them.
Yep. So
chasing him out of the city, I guess. I don't know.
Or around a square. I don't know.
Could be, yeah. And then we have a little thing down here at the bottom, picture of Scarlet Witch, and it says, at last, they're back, Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I had some reading comprehension problems there. All right, and we open with Jarvis, the Avengers man, the Avengers gentleman, the Avengers. There's another word there, but it wouldn't come into me. Manservant.
I'm just going to go with butler.
Butler, yeah, but there was another word. Answering an Avengers alarm. Now, why is Jarvis answering the alarm? The alarm, you may ask. Well, we will find out here shortly. He is I was of the impression that he was actually throwing the levers to cause these different defenses to take effect. So he was actually turning them all on, I thought. We see a figure that is moving so quickly it's blurred, whited out, as a matter of fact, going through several different traps and bouncing through other traps unharmed, finally coming to rest in front of Jarvis, slowing down enough so that he can finally be perceived. And just as he does, Jarvis confirms who it is because he surmised who it was because he was avoiding all the traps to begin with.
Mm-hmm. But I do need to mention, you have forgotten the creative team for this book.
Yes, I did. We have a Stan Lee edited comic that was written by Roy Thomas, drawn by John Buscema, inked by Tom Palmer, and lettered by Sam Rosen.
All right, so Stan, Roy, John, Tom, Sam, there you go.
Yep. And at this point, Jarvis tells Quicksilver that the Avengers are currently not in residence because Quicksilver is there to speak with them. And thus is why Jarvis was doing all these different things to a point, but I would assume that all of these things would have been automated anyways. So apparently not. I guess we haven't gotten to that point in Avengers history where the Avengers mansion's defenses are automated, which seems kind of odd with Tony Stark in residence. But
well, yeah. Yeah.
You know, so that means, I mean, I remember them always talking about some Avenger having to be on monitor duty, so there was always someone there 24 hours a day, but I always thought monitor duty was like keeping up with any calls for help and stuff like that.
Yeah, I was going to say monitoring for, like, you know, some event or something.
Yeah, yeah, not having to, like, man the defenses, the protecting of their home base. That seems kind of redundant.
Well, I can't see why even then in you know 1970 anyone would think that it would have to be manually activated.
I don't know. Maybe it was just story thing. Mm. I mean, maybe the next time we see somebody try to break into the mansion, it will be something automated.
Mm. Upgrade.
You know, I don't know. Yeah. Avengers Mansion
2.8A.
Yeah. 2.8.1.06. Yeah, there you go. Or, well, I guess it would be whatever, 0.1970.
Yeah, exactly.
Would be the current version.
Mm-hmm.
Quicksilver is now quite distraught because the entire reason he was in the Avengers Mansion, New York, running through all these defenses, tiring himself out, he said he was tired, was to speak to the Avengers. So Jarvis tells him that they are at the pier, Pier 12. Pier 13, is that the name of the store?
Mm-hmm.
I guess it comes later.
Yes. Or next.
Right, right. So Quicksilver heads out. He pinballs off some cars in the process. I'm not sure why they showed that.
Me, okay. Me neither. I was like, wait, so he's bouncing off of cars?
Yeah, okay. And to show how fast he is, I guess.
Well, but then he's all like curled up in a ball with like his knees to his chest and his hands on his knees, and it's like, you're a pinball?
Or a cannonball, as the case may be.
Wrong character, but yeah.
I don't know. We see at Pier 12 that there's a what appears to be a press conference. The Avengers are in attendance, and a couple plain clothes Avengers, Avengers that are not wearing their heroic garb. Because, and this is cool, because this is something I never knew about.
Mm-hmm. Me neither.
Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, who are now married, actually, I'm sorry, they have been for a little while. Van Dyne comes later. This is Janet Pym, who is Yellow Jacket Hank Pym is Ant-Man, Giant Man, and Yellow Jacket.
Mm.
Janet Pym is Wasp.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, later on in the career, Hank will take on the aspect of the Wasp as well. But
okay,
that's much farther. That's very recent to now.
Mm.
They are going on a. It's not a mission. He has been requested by the government. He being Hank, to attend to the oil fields in the Alaska. In Alaska, I guess. Mm-hmm. This is in conjunction to the Alaska pipeline.
Yeah, it would probably be
1970. Mm-hmm. So he's going up there to do some research on the wildlife to see studying of the effects
of the new oil fields on Alaskan wildlife.
Yeah. So they've asked one of, if not the world's premier biochemist, mm-hmm. to go do that. Seems like a bit of overkill to me, but okay.
Well, I mean, a little bit. It's like I'm top in my field in the world, and the U.S. government wants to send me.
And he's an Avenger. So
yeah, exactly. It's like, who's the best man? Well, that would be the Avenger that is the biochemist. Oh, we should send him.
Yeah. He agreed. Janet is going with him because she's his wife, but they are also accompanied by longtime friend of Hank Pym, Bill Foster, mm-hmm. who is a scientist with Tony Stark, working at Stark Labs. Now, that is kind of cool because Bill Foster is the costumed hero known as Black Goliath.
I have never heard of him.
Yes. So Alaska will now have its own little contingent of Avengers and hanger-ons.
Yeah, exactly.
Hangers-on. How do you say that?
Hangers on.
Yeah, the Avengers Alaska, the Alaskan Avengers. Or I don't know. Maybe that book came out and I missed it.
Avengers Juno.
There we go. Much better.
Mm-hmm.
So they're shipping off
the Kenai Avengers.
Kenai. I don't get that one.
Dude, look up. Yeah, never mind.
Look up what?
Look it up.
Kenai
Peninsula.
Kenai. Oh, is that the little chin of Alaska there?
Yeah.
Dicks out?
Yeah.
Is that what becomes the Aleutian Islands?
I'm thinking it is, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So also, if you watch Brother Bear, Kenai is a character.
No, I've grown up from Brother Bear.
Oh.
Sorry.
Classic.
Yeah. Okay, when you were 12, I guess. The Avengers that are here that are active are Vision, Captain America, Goliath, who is Hawkeye, Clint Barton, under the effect of Pym Particles,
mm-hmm.
and Black Panther. So now our six Avengers, pretty good sized team, is mm-hmm. down to four.
Yeah, that's one thing I did notice was it was like, you know, now it's just a foursome. Now, granted, I mean, you know, you've got the Black Panther, you've got Captain America, and you've got Vision. and you've got Big Man. But
yeah, you've got Muscle. Yeah. Yeah, so.
But I mean, you've got, you know, you've got the Black Panther, who is awesome. You've got Captain America, who is, I mean, you know, Captain America. And Vision is the best android, like, ever built.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're not exactly hurting. This is also, I think, still before the writers started writing the Avengers wanting backup members.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that. So I would suspect that for this time frame, those are the Avengers we're going to have. Mm-hmm. They won't really call anybody in or anything. Although maybe after this issue, they'll get a couple more members. Maybe that's why they're in the issue.
Yeah, and then maybe that's why they're writing them out.
Yeah, yeah. So doing a little switcheroo there. The writers wanted to change things up.
Mm-hmm.
So the Avengers are here, the ones that are left, and they are beset upon by a breeze. And then the breeze turns into more like an attacking force. And it interacts one by one with the different Avengers. Goliath first, Black Panther, Captain America. None of the three are able to stop this breeze-causing entity, which... If you guys are reading the book, you know who this is because of the way it's drawn and everything like that. The Avengers don't know yet. And then finally, Quicksilver comes up against Vision, tries to just run him over, and Vision does the density-altering thing, and Quicksilver bounces off of him instead of the reverse, which is what Quicksilver was assuming would happen.
Yeah, which... honestly was like one of the funniest things I've seen in comic books for a while, you know, with doing this. It's like, yeah, he's like a mountain.
Quicksilver is going to have to be made of a little bit sterner stuff because of the speeds and the air pressure and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But come on, he ran into a mountain.
Yeah.
And he's not hurt?
No, he just got bounced off. That was it.
Yeah. I mean, like, broken limbs and concussion and, you know, it's like, no, dude stopped and bounced back.
Yep.
You know, this was the immovable force and an irresistible – or a irresistible force and an immovable object, and the force lost.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. That may be the first time ever.
The implications.
I know. So, yeah, I was like, he's not like a mosquito on a windshield or so, you know? So.
Well, but I mean, you got to understand, I mean, what is he moving at? Let's say better than 100 miles an hour, obviously.
Well, he's moving faster than you can see.
Okay. And I mean, you can see 200, you can see 300 miles an hour. So, but think about the stresses of, well, moving that quickly on a human body, but any slight change in direction on, say, his legs, the bones in his legs, the lower bones in his legs.
Shin bones?
Yeah. You know, ankles, feet, you know, so... If he's able to do that, I mean, I don't even know what speed you'd not be able to see anything but a blur at.
Yeah, I mean, you can sit and make out cars in races that are going, like you said, a couple hundred miles an hour.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was envisioning. You know, like sitting on the sideline and being like, okay, you know, I'm staring right ahead and something moves in front of me. I was able to pick out details up to, 300 miles an hour. I'm able to follow it at the record-setting ground land speed of 200-300 and something miles an hour. So he's moving at what? And those stresses on everything. I mean, I just
– Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. You would have a host of – centripetal and centrifugal, shear, the pressure dam that he is pushing out in front of him. Mm-hmm. And yeah. And then, like you said, any change of direction at all, no matter how minute, would, and he doesn't minutely change. I mean, he like 90 degree
yeah,
changes.
He does. He, and so, I mean, think about that. I mean, think about running at our speed and trying to do a 90 degree angle change.
Yeah.
And so he's doing it at hundreds and hundreds of miles an hour. So, I mean, he's going to be pretty resilient.
I guess that all makes sense. Speaking of which, if he does a 90 degree, does he stop and then start again?
That is a good question. And if he does, he does it faster than the blink of an eye?
Right, yeah. I guess that would be like a physics question. Can he change direction, or does he have to come to a stop and then start in that other direction? I never thought about that before.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe that's why it always looks 90 degrees, because he has come to a stop and our vision is catching up, but before we can completely catch up with him, he's taken off again.
Exactly.
And so it's the image is trailing our
what we need is a listener who is a professor of higher knowledge.
Or someone who knows Quicksilver personally and can ask.
Okay, see, you're reaching right there.
That rock. Or Flash.
Well, see,
Flash would have to function much the same way, and he's got his own show now, so maybe.
Well, you should call him.
Maybe he's more approachable.
He seems to be. I mean.
But that would be interesting to find. I've read comic books for hundreds of years, and I never stopped to think about that, mm-hmm. but. Yeah. In order to does he stop and then start?
Well, I mean, he would have to.
Or does he like just lean?
but you know? Then the line would curve slightly.
Yeah, it would. It would have to curve.
I mean, he would literally have to stop and change direction.
Oh, well. Chef Terry is sitting here looking at me like we need to get moving, so.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, so the stunned, I guess he would have to be. Quicksilver is laying here, and Goliath grabs him up and is holding him. I was expecting Quicksilver to start hammering away at his hand or something like that, break his thumb, or but he doesn't. He's like, "Yeah, you're right. You got me. I'm sorry. I went off kind of half cocked, and I shouldn't have reacted that way to you guys and everything." And then he goes into his story. Mm-hmm. You know, I am that way because I'm very concerned about my sister. And then we see the story of his sister, and I don't know. It doesn't look like to me that this story really has been anywhere else. So this might be the first time any readers are reading what has been happening to Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch.
Well, also, there aren't any of those boxes.
Yeah, that's true.
The writers or editors put in saying, you know, oh, read about this in...
Right, yeah, advertising other books or whatever.
So I think this might be original to this specific comic.
So what has happened is Wanda recently has lost her hex powers.
Do we know why? It didn't explain it.
I don't know if this particular time it gets explained. I guess we'll just have to keep reading and see.
Okay.
It's happened on and off throughout her career.
Oh, okay.
I presume that because of her power level, that's about the only way that writers a lot of times can think to depower her.
Regulate her?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, she's a potentially a what's the name we've used, Mary Jane or something like that, a Mary America, that character that is all doing. There's somebody's name for it when it occurs in literary works, a Mary something or something like that. Somebody out there will know what I'm talking about. But it's that character that gets created with all the powers, mm-hmm. and can do anything, we've talked about it before.
Okay.
I know we have in D&D.
Well, it doesn't like even tickle, you know, like anything. So, I mean, okay.
Yeah, we've talked about it as it applies to D&D and you being a dungeon master before. People rolling up a character and bringing it in that has all these magical items and all these things, and you have to look it over and say, well, no, 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 no. Okay, we'll leave you with the boots.
Okay.
Okay. Well, okay. Because, you know, her thing is chaos magic, so mm-hmm. basically she can make anything fail, so, I mean, she would be all-powerful, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Conceivably, as a writer, you could just say, well, no, that didn't work because magic. And there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So she's lost her hex power. Her and Pietro are her and Quicksilver, Pietro is his given name. They are Wanda and Pietro Maximoff, by the way, guys. Children of Magneto. Spoiler. But that's already come out in the story here. They're wandering around Eastern Europe. That's where they're from. Trying to find something about her powers. Interestingly enough, they both know that they're both mutants, so I don't understand how they could be hoping to read magical tomes and tomes of lore and things like this and find out about their mutant powers. But that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because as we all know, having read X-Men, all mutants are children of the Atom, which to me would mean that they did not occur until after.
Right.
The atomic age. But that has since proven not to be the case as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they are accompanied by Toad. Now, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Toad is one of Magneto's lackeys, probably the most spineless, fawning over Magneto people that he has. What doesn't come out here but has come out before is that he kind of has a thing for Wanda.
Oh, no, it came out here.
Yeah, you can kind of fit, but it's not stated, really.
No, I mean, words weren't actually said specifically, I've got a thing for you, but,
yeah,
dude, you read his reactions and how they wrote them, and it's like, Toad's got a thing for Wanda. Plain and
simple. Yeah.
By the way, it's called a Mary Sue.
Mary Sue. There we go. So we're looking they're looking around, and they come to a place that Toad says he knew about, but up until this point he had forgotten that he had known, which is kind of, but I guess possible, because who knows what hanging around Magneto's magnetic waves would do to a brain anyways.
Well,
so,
I mean, you know, look at Toad.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
I mean, it's like, I don't really have high expectations for that boy to begin with. So, you know, it's like, oh, I just remembered. Okay. I'm not even going to waste my time and be like, why didn't you tell us that before?
You guys out there who haven't read these early issues of Toad, he is nothing like the Toad that pops up in the movies.
Oh, no. No, no, no.
He gets to that point in our current comics. He's a much cooler character, but here he's not. He was the jester.
Okay.
Whenever any group is together and Toad is a part of it, he is the jester, not as far as his actions, but as far as how he is written.
And almost there's a jester-esque look to his clothing, almost. You know, he's got the tunic, he's got the leggings, and he's got that big collar thing that goes all the way around. You know,
yeah, big flange collar.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's you know, he every now and then, you know, he would do something cool, but yeah, he was the Joker, the jester.
You know, if Quasimodo met a jester, that would be the Toad.
Yeah. So they're searching out like the last place that, you know, is available. They've been everywhere all over Eastern Europe. By accident, Quicksilver triggers a hidden compartment in this last basement that they're looking in.
Mm-hmm.
pulls out a glowing book, and they all feel that this book holds the answer that Wanda has been looking for. Even Pietro, even though he says, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't mess with this. We should put this back.
Yeah.
He feels that what they're looking for is here, but he also feels that this book shouldn't be messed with.
Mm-hmm.
Wanda grabs it up. It automatically opens to a page, and she just starts reading the incantations on the page.
Yep, always a good sign right there.
Yeah, really. And summons a character that we see here in one panel, in silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
And then they speak, and then he speaks, and when he speaks, his full visage is available for us. And it turns out that this is Archon the Magnificent that she has summoned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm familiar with Archon now. Another cool point, I wasn't aware that this is where he first appeared, or the reason why he first appeared.
Okay, so this is his first appearance?
I'm pretty sure this is his first appearance in – If it's definitely his first appearance with the Avengers. Okay. It may be, I thought, his first appearance Marvel, period.
Okay, because I knew the name. So, but the thing is with, you know, movies, other comics that I've read, cartoons, yeah, TV shows, I don't know where it was that I first knew him, but like when I read, oh, Archon, I know that dude. So I didn't know if this was his first in comics. And somehow I knew that, or I knew him from somewhere else, or what.
Right. So he is – he doesn't necessarily attack them, but he's not the friendliest of sorts.
No.
They're trying – it's without – reading what they're doing here. Toad, I guess Toad attacks first. So they are the aggressors in Archon's eyes. And then Archon fights back. So now the two sides are actively fighting back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us that know Toad know that he really didn't pose much of a threat. But Archon doesn't know that.
No, he just sees a dude moving at him.
Yeah. So Archon, one of his raiments is a quiver on his back that is full of lightning bolts, it appears.
Mm-hmm.
And he pulls one of these lightning bolts after stunning Toad and getting him to stop. He hits Toad with one of these lightning bolts, and Toad disappears, crying out "No" in big letters that diminish in size over two panels, mm-hmm. kind of like he's almost the impression that he is being pulled somewhere, in my mind, is what it felt like.
Okay.
So then Archon turns his attention to Quicksilver and Wanda, grabs up Wanda, and tells her that, yes, that she is going to be – he has chosen her to be his queen.
Yeah, that was a surprise to her.
Yeah, and he has come to get her.
Yeah.
And he then takes a moment to explain himself.
Yeah.
He name drops, says that he is the Empyrean or ruler of his does he say? Yeah, he says just world, mm-hmm. but as far as we know where his world is, I don't know of anything else coming from anywhere there. So like If that world is in another dimension, I don't think I've ever run across anything else from that dimension but Archon's planet.
Yeah, I don't know of anything either.
So he is the supreme ruler there. He is from a warlike planet, not warlike, I guess maybe a warrior planet.
Yeah.
They do nothing on the planet but fight.
Yep.
And so everything is geared for fighting. Everyone is born and bred to fight. So Archon is the best of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
We see also, though, that those that become too old to fight can devote themselves to other endeavors.
Mm-hmm.
We have one who is a scientist. He has detected a problem with the atmosphere of Archon and atmosphere of Archon's world, and shows Archon. Turns out that Archon's planet is ringed by radiation belts. Rings of radiation encircle the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Those rings are responsible for all the light that the planet gets.
Right.
Those rings are disintegrating, according to the scientist, and Archon believes what he is being shown as well. So as far as we know, the rings are going out. And if they go out, then Archon's planet loses light. And without light, we know the cascade effect that would happen for life.
Mm-hmm.
But as they are attempting to find a solve, to solve the problem, something interesting starts happening. And that is that every time there is an atomic blast on Earth, the planet, Archon's planet, receives enough energy for a whole year.
From one atomic blast, yes.
One atomic blast. Now, I assume that is tests, right?
I would have to assume the same.
Because there's only been, what, two blasts that weren't tests, right?
Mm.
The two we dropped on Japan in World War II. Otherwise, everything else has been a quote-unquote test.
Okay, we'll go with quote-unquote, but yes.
Well, I mean, yeah. So since 1945... 45, 44, maybe, something like that. These guys have been getting an extra year for every atomic blast. That'd be interesting to see how many of those there have been.
Well, but so. Here's the thing. Is it an extra year? Or because what they're saying is each blast is the equivalent of a year.
Yeah, right.
Does that save up? Like, if we blast three times in a year or two times in a year, does that mean that they get – 2 full years, or had we spaced it out, they would have?
My feeling is that it puts enough energy into the belt for it to last another year.
Okay, so then you're thinking that our blasts are charging their belt?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Now, it could also be, like you said, it's not having any effect on them at all. But they have seen and measured that these blasts contain the amount of energy that they would need to keep their belt going for a year.
Well, I mean,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I would think that it's possible for the energy to transfer to them because Archon can transfer to us. Right? So, I mean,
yeah.
If that's where you're going about, you know, different dimensions and how can one and the – well, Archon can, so
– Well, no. My thing was if one blast powers for a year, then from blast detonation to however long their year is, that's how long they have light. But what happens if in that period for them we detonate a second time? Does – from that point, that second point detonation for us, is that another year cycle or is it 2 years cumulative?
Well, okay. And right. My thinking would be that it would be cumulative.
Okay.
That once we started exploding, it reignited their rings.
Oh,
okay. And every successive blast has added energy, but they still realize that it's finite because mm-hmm. it's only, you know, one blast, no matter how many blasts there are, it's only going to do us a year.
Okay.
So, one, we need to keep the Earth doing that mm-hmm. still. You know, but again, we can count how many and we know how many years we're going to have, and it's still a finite amount.
Right. So. Okay. Okay.
Maybe not. You know, maybe I'm misreading it somehow.
Well, it was just it was a question that I had. I was like, I wonder how that works.
And this particular thing does come up again. I think I don't know that it's I have a feeling that it's not solved in this particular story, because I recall that issue still being an issue for Archon at one point when he came over to Earth, and I have not read this issue of Avengers up until now.
Mm.
So it could be that maybe I did and I just completely don't remember it. We'll have to wait until the culmination of the storyline to see if it gets fixed for him. Mm-hmm. But I seem to recall that something happened. Maybe it does get fixed later on here, but something happened that it like didn't take, and he comes back to the Earth again for help or something like
okay.
that. I do know he's fought the X-Men. I know that he's fought the Fantastic Four. So he's been over here several times,
mm-hmm.
you know, so he keeps coming. If his stuff gets fixed, he keeps coming over for something.
Yeah, exactly.
I even think that a warrior woman from his world ultimately comes over here and takes up residence too. That's the interaction with the Fantastic Four, I believe, because I believe her name is Titania, and she's a hanger-on of the Fantastic Four a little bit later on, I think, but I might not be. I might not be right.
Okay.
So they come up with a plan when they realize the amount of energy that's released by the atomic explosions on Earth, that they can forever power their life-giving rings if they set off one mammoth explosion at the right place on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, there we go. So that's what Archon, you know, sets about doing. He now, in order to save his planet, needs to find a way to get to Earth.
Right.
Now the story cuts back to where he's already here on Earth. It doesn't really address the lightning bolts or how he got them or how he knows how to use or any of that. We're just back. He has pretty much finished his tale because he sees that Quicksilver has recovered and is about to attack. But before he can, Archon makes Wanda first, and then he himself disappear, leaving Quicksilver there by himself.
Yep.
That is the point that Quicksilver decides that he needs help. He needs Avengers help. Jets off, and within mere moments, I'm sure, arrives at Avengers Mansion, and our tale picks up from there.
There you go.
So we see everybody kind of hanging out here on the street. Goliath is even sitting on a car as Quicksilver finishes his tale. I'm glad that's not my car. That kind of reminds me of that commercial, insurance commercial, where people keep having these really offbeat things happen to their car.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't know – is that the one? Because they don't know where to start to get a new one, or – I forget which one. But, yeah, stuff falls on the one dude and a
–
One of those things that you use to knock down buildings falls on another woman's car.
And, yeah, it's the character's name in the commercial is the name for that circumstance. Not tragedy, but
Not Mayhem. Is that who you're thinking?
Maybe
the dude that was on X-File or was on Law and Order SVU.
Maybe
you don't know him. He is the pine tree in one commercial.
Yeah.
No, I think it may be the same company, but those are different commercials that have him. This is one that these things are just happening. Like, this woman is walking to her car and this big thing just drops on it. And another dude has just left his car and somebody was trying to install an air conditioner several stories up in the building he's parked next to, and it falls on his car.
Oh, no, I've seen that one, but I can't remember the insurance company.
Yeah, I don't know. But this would be in that commercial.
Oh, yeah.
Goliath sitting on your car.
Yeah, big man sits on car.
Yeah, out of nowhere.
Avengers sits on your car. You need insurance for that.
Quicksilver has told them, the Avengers. The Avengers are now leery of this Archon dude, so they realize they need to find him, you know, because of – sounds like he's going to try to do something to destroy the Earth. Lo and behold, as they're sitting here, standing here, talking out in front of a television sales shop.
Mm-hmm.
One of the TVs is on, and it has a report of a man armed with strange lightning bolts.
And I just want to add, that's got to be a what, a 20-some, 30-some inch TV, box TV?
Right.
For $49.99. No, I'm sorry, for $499.
$99, yeah.
So $500 can get you that wonderful model.
A big console television in 1970.
Yeah, and color, though. It's color.
Yes,
it's color. So I thought that was these little glimpses into the past are fun for me because, you know, obviously I didn't live then.
Right, yeah.
So it's like being able to look back and see, you know, okay, yeah, I know they had TV, duh. But, dude, $500 for something that now, like today, is like we're not paying $20 for a TV like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can even get them.
Maybe at a pawn shop. Like,
yeah,
like
big console television.
Yeah, like floor model. Like, yeah, $500 for something like that. $500 buys you a flat screen HD TV.
Of pretty good size.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, those little interjections of reality in the comic book world, mm-hmm. as it's being written. Yeah, those are fascinating. Absolutely. The scientists appear to have gathered the scientists have gathered at the first major conference of the world's top nuclear physicists. That's who the this dude apparently is on site and he is reporting this live from there. So Archon has jumped in here with his teleporting thunderbolts,
mm-hmm.
stolen three scientists, according to him, perhaps more, and then disappeared, leaving everything in much disarray. I kind of picture it almost like a UN for scientists.
Me too. That's exactly what I thought too when I heard, you know, like, conference.
Yeah, yeah,
and
that's...
You see, like, in this panel over here on the last page, you see, like, this big, almost curved-like desk where there are a number of people, and looking at their garb, obviously, of different ethnicities, you know, I was thinking kind of like a UN nuclear physicist thing.
Yeah, yeah, a brainy UN. So he broke into the UN and stole some brain delegates from around the world.
Yeah, exactly.
Disappeared, and that's where our story ends. The meeting now in disarray, the scientists missing, Archon having come and gone, and the Avengers being aware of all of that having transpired.
Right.
So, next issue we have is... Oh, no. Wait a minute.
I was going to...
Sorry, Levi.
What are you doing,
what did
dude?
You think about that issue of Avengers? Sorry, I got to catch up here.
I know. It's okay. It's okay.
My mind was about 10 minutes ahead. I need to reel it back.
All right. What did I think? Okay. Let's do this. Overall, I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
Okay.
Okay. Because for me, the good outweighed the bad.
Okay.
But honestly, only slightly.
Okay.
My biggest detractors for this one was one. I didn't like the fact that Captain America missed with his shield.
Okay.
When he threw at Quicksilver, he missed.
Right. Well, he is only human.
No, he is more than human.
Okay. He is only human. Okay. All right. Go.
So
what else?
Okay. Another thing was the hot-headedness of Goliath when they first encounter Quicksilver.
Mm-hmm.
Just automatically, it didn't matter. And obviously, you know, reading it, they parted on not the bestest of terms, but you know, it was like you could do well, you could do a lot better than I'm going to smash you. I mean, you're not the Hulk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Those are somebody else's words.
Exactly. So it's like, why don't you just calm down and like just see what's going on?
Those two may have an anti thing for each other, but yeah. I'm not sure that I can remember why. At some point, I know Hawkeye gets a thing for Scarlet Witch, but I don't mm-hmm. remember when exactly. If that has already occurred, Quicksilver is always very protective of his sister,
yeah.
And if he didn't think that that Clint was worthy, he wouldn't like him.
Yeah, exactly.
But again, I'm not sure if all of that has occurred yet or not. But that happens with Quicksilver a lot.
Yeah,
he is the helicopter brother
yeah.
for Scarlet Witch.
Yeah,
always giving his approval or denial, regardless of whether she asks for it or not.
Yeah,
always giving her his opinion. You know, so yeah, he's very much the. The overbearing helicopter brother
yeah,
to her.
Exactly. Another thing was the whole, oh, I just happened to hit my elbow on the wall and it opened up this secret place that has the book that we needed. You know, I was like, write a little bit more effort.
Well, now they did go ahead and
yes,
explain that by saying that.
That Archon,
Scarlet Witch.
Well, no, that Archon actually basically manipulated them.
Yeah, Scarlet Witch suggested that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did some kind of maybe reality whammy on him or maybe some kind of mind whammy and coaxed him. Yeah.
Still, it was a little weak for me, honestly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I got you.
Let's see here. What else? There was something else like made. Oh. Okay, so I do have a bit of an issue with, you know, oh, well, I don't care about this other planet so long as mine lives.
Okay.
Now, of course, when it comes down to me versus you, it's always going to be me. Okay, I get that, but there wasn't, like, anything else discussed as to, okay, how else do we do this?
Mm-hmm.
And as a leader of a world... You know,
you automatically resort to, if not destroying another planet, at the very least making some pretty severe enemies.
Yeah, you know, it's like, okay, so it's them or us. Okay, I get that. I'm the type of guy that brings war upon everyone. Okay. And so, old man, you're saying that we need to destroy with a nuclear bomb this other planet for ours to live. Okay, I'm down. Let's do that. It was like there was no exploration of anything, like anything else. There was even a question of, are you sure?
What kind of sense does it make for any leader to look at a technologically superior foe and say, we're going to beat you and, you know, you can't do anything about it. Being technologically superior,
yeah,
they would already have a pretty whelming, if not overwhelming, advantage.
Right.
You know, that's like, you know, Native Americans, when white man first encountered them, looking at, you know, Vietnamese era American army and saying, oh, we got this.
Yeah. And, but it wasn't, for me, it wasn't the technology aspect. It was the, I'm willing to kill.
Right.
So many people, an entire race, an entire planet. I'm okay with destroying to save my own without looking at other possible, like any other possibility. There was nothing.
And they know full well what that entails, because once they realized Earth was there, they've been spying on us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And they've been, you know, like, they knew that they're mutants because they've been watching. They knew the names of the people that they were going after because they've been watching them.
So, I mean, they've been watching in very finite detail.
Yeah. And what's so, going on. So at the very least, they couldn't go over and be like, can we have some help?
Yeah. Dude, can you help us? And if not, we're going to blow you up.
Exactly.
But can you help us?
At least something other than, so them or us, nuclear bomb. All right, let's do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was rather, no leeway, rather cutthroat.
Yeah. It was just, well, heartless. I mean, it's just, I mean, I understand, like, oh, we do nothing but war. Okay. And you do it with honor. That's obvious.
You can still have a heart.
Exactly. Yeah. But then we do nothing but war. We have heart. But we kill all of you. Screw you. It's like, mm-hmm. Really? So the things that I had the issue with.
Okay. Those are pretty major. I mean, yeah. That's
the things that brought it out of a thumbs down for me was, one, I kind of liked seeing Jarvis.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you know, it's like, dude's actually doing something. Now, he may, you know, be he may do more things in other issues, but, you know, as a person who doesn't read a lot of the issues, seeing Jarvis do something, kind of liked that. I liked seeing characters leave the group, team members leave the group by not dying. Like
of their own?
Well, like a real sort of thing, even though maybe it's a bit far-fetched like we talked about earlier. You know, it's like, but we're deciding to do this, and this is what we're going to do. And so because of that, we're going to, you know, be leaving the team. So it was kind of refreshing, actually, instead of, you know, they're dead, or you screwed me over one too many times and I'm leaving, or I was really evil for, you know, like the entire time and now I'm going to spend the rest of my life trying to destroy you. It was like, no, we're actually going to do something good and we have to leave the team. You know, it was like, finally.
Okay.
So, you know, that was nice. Another thing was, I kind of liked the Black Panther.
Man, he was barely there.
But he was there.
He was. He's part of the team.
And I just, I really like seeing the Black Panther because I think he's a rocking character. You know? And to top everything off, like I mentioned before, seeing Quicksilver just hit the Vision and bounce off. It was like, that's funny. I mean, cause any speedster's like, oh, I'm going to go through you. I'm going to knock you down. And the Vision, and this is what I really liked is what the Vision said. And he said this, your words, Pietro, prove that I know more about your powers than you know about those of the Vision.
Said, by the way, with absolutely no emotion.
Nope.
No inflection.
Nope.
He was not bragging.
No.
He was just stating
fact.
Just a fact. Yeah. That's all. He was stating a fact. Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, you know, Quicksilver's, he's zipping around and he's running through things and he's running around things and he's bouncing off of cars. And, but then it's like, Division's like, no, I know you. I know of you. I know your powers. I know how to defeat you. This is how I will defeat you. I will stand here. I will become heavy as a mountain.
He pulled a Gandalf.
Yeah, he did.
Yep. And he did it. I mean,
he did not pass.
No, he did not.
and he bounced off and right into a bunch of crates, and it was great. So that topped the issue for me, honestly. So those things are why it got a thumbs up, because it was just like, yeah, bad stuff, wrong stuff. Yeah, hard to believe stuff. But these were just fun, and this was just cool. And those things made it worth reading and carried me through the things that I was like, meh.
Okay, cool.
Plus seeing Goliath sit on a car. Oh, no, but there was another thing that I really liked. And who was it? They were talking. Oh, I gotta find it real quick. Sorry.
That's all right.
But no, it was when everyone was the team was talking to Quicksilver, and I thought this was so cool because you wouldn't. Okay, it's page 7, and you wouldn't think about this, but page 7, bottom of the page, right hand panel.
Okay.
Captain America. Okay, first of all, Goliath is on a knee with one leg up. Okay. Captain America is sitting on a knee. Sitting on Goliath's knee, and T'Challa is leaning against his leg. So, like, Goliath, because he's so big, isn't a person. Right now, he's this structure, basically.
It also shows you how comfortable all of them are together.
Exactly. It's like, well, you know, he's been like this a couple of times, and we got tired, and we needed a place to sit.
Yeah. We're just hanging, you know.
And I took special note of that, too, because it's like, The writers, you know, maybe they were like, you know, what would be really cool is if, like, Cap and T'Challa, they were just, like, sort of leaning against or sitting on or, you know, but it's like, but they are. You know, it's like, oh, that, you know, we're going to sit here and listen to the story, and I'm going to lean on your leg, which is, like, 3/4 my height.
Yeah, just chill.
Yeah.
They're just chilling, and that's where they are. You know, sitting here, leaning there, standing there.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you saw earlier where to get a tactical advantage, Cap has scaled Goliath and is on his shoulder. Where Goliath is grabbing.
Oh, yeah. No, I see it. Yep.
Yeah, he's on his – he's on his shoulder.
Yeah, he's climbing him and
it's
like,
dude.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's Goliath is he becomes a thing.
Exactly. He is a person. He is a member. He is a character, but he's also a fixture.
Yeah, he's an object.
Because he's so big.
Which is – saying that he's an object, that's kind of funny because Goliath is the object, but Vision is not.
No. He is more human than humans.
Which is, you know, yeah, because so Goliath is flesh and blood and Vision is a robot.
Android.
But – Android. But, yeah, so.
Yeah.
Okay, I – This era from the 70s, pretty much the Bronze Age Avengers, are my favorite era of Avengers.
Okay.
My favorite Avengers team comes later.
Okay.
I think it's early to middle 80s, actually, is my favorite team. So, actually, it falls in the same time frame, too. But – this the 6, 7, 8 member Avengers that they're going to consistently have through this period have some of the coolest Avengers that they get in my mind.
Okay.
Black Panther, Vision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're both cool.
Mm-hmm.
Quicksilver and Wanda are probably my favorite Avenger because they're a package deal.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one, you always get the other. So there's two of them, but it's always one thing that has joined the Avengers.
Right.
And during this period, there will be another probably 4 or 5 characters that join and fall off throughout the next 10, 15 years that I really like when they were Avengers. Now, I don't necessarily like these characters in their own books, if they've had their own books or in other appearances. I like them as part of the team and the way that everyone interacts with this particular character as a part.
Okay, so it's because of their interaction in the Avengers is why you like them as much as you do.
The Avengers group dynamic when Vision is a member,
okay,
when Black Panther is a member.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other Avengers teams that don't have this list of Avengers that I feel that way about, that I'm like, well, they're just the Avengers. You know, they're not the Avengers when so-and-so was a part or when so-and-so was a part. They're just Avengers. And I enjoy them, but I don't enjoy it in the same way. I enjoy it because it's Avengers, not because it's an Avengers when Vision was there.
Right.
Or when, you know, when Black Panther was there.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Probably the thing about not just the Avengers, but a lot of these books, but in large part the Avengers, because I've always really dug the Avengers, is being able to read the history of Marvel that we have now and refer to now as it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
A couple things really brought that to mind in this issue. Bill Foster being used, because for a very, very long time he wasn't. He didn't appear anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And spoiler, he won't be appearing any longer. And then Archon, who I have run into, you know, a couple times, this is at the very least his first run-in with the Avengers, if not his first entrance into the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. And so those things are just cool to just kind of, you know, further flesh out for me Marvel history. And I like that. Oh, and not to mention, I never knew that Hank and Janet went to Alaska to work.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not sure that it ever is used again for anything or any, but it's like, oh, well, but if somewhere along the way somebody tosses out, you know, some reference, I'll be like, oh yeah, they did go to Alaska, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
Back in, yeah, that issue. And yeah, so that's cool. So I would also give it a thumbs up.
Okay.
All right, our second book is Captain America.
Yes.
Issue 124.
Yep.
On the cover, Captain is he's running to or from, you can't really tell, because he says, I stumbled into a trap, sudden death in front and behind. And behind him, you see an AIM agent holding a gun at him. But from the front over to the side, all you see is a gauntlet similar to the AIM agents holding a gun as well. So the assumption being that that's another AIM agent just off to the side a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You can only see his hand. Is he human? Can he be killed? How does Cap battle the creature called Cyborg, which on the cover you don't see Cyborg at all?
Nope.
And then down here in the corner we have extra farewell to Nick Fury and the girl Cap loves.
Yep.
Question. I'm not sure. I understand the girl part, but I'm not sure about the Nick Fury part. Yeah, I am. Okay. I see what they're doing. All right. So we start with Cap fighting a couple AIM agents, as is written for us by Stan Lee, drawn by Gene Colan, inked by Joe Sinnott, and lettered by Sam Rosen. Mm. Now, Gene Colan's art at this time is, for me, in my mind, is very synonymous with 70s Marvel. I don't know why that is, but whenever I see Gene Colan, that's automatically where I go. So whatever I'm reading, I look to see if that's where it's from. Now, of course, he still is creating now, so all of his stuff is not going to be 70s stuff. Mm-hmm. But he is always one of the first creators that comes to mind when I think of Marvel 70s. You know, somebody says, who was drawing in Marvel in the 70s? Gene Colan's always one of the first names in my head. Mm-hmm. So Cap is fighting. He defeats these two agents pretty resoundingly. Picks up the blaster that one of them has, but it disintegrates. All through the battle, there are several references to the creature that is currently leading AIM. AIM is a Marvel evil group composed of scientists. The letters stand for Advanced Idea Mechanics. At this point, if they still stand for that now, I'm not sure. And MODOK is a creature that AIM created. I don't think they created him with the idea of him becoming the leader, but he was intelligent enough and found a way to do it. So he now leads this rogue group of scientists. And all they want to do is have things that allow them to further science, to discover things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they'll look for other dimensional things or alien things. You know, a lot of things that can be pretty dangerous if they're just left to their own devices. Right. So that's kind of the biggest way in my mind that they are an evil group.
Mm.
Also, they don't really use their advances for the advancement of mankind, just for the advancement of their organization.
Right.
I guess that would mark them as evil also.
Yeah.
So the two agents return to – I don't think they name it here, but at some point I believe they refer to their home bases as hives. Mm-hmm. Although I don't think they do in this issue.
I don't recall them doing it now.
But they return to a home base here, and one of them is killed out of hand, but the other is given a choice. For failing, you can either die or become part of the cyborg experiment. He doesn't want to die, so he automatically says he'll become part of the cyborg experiment, but then later on we see him asking, and what is the cyborg experiment?
Yeah.
So that tells me he just, not out of any feeling of doing anything for AIM, he just picks it because it's not death.
Yeah, it was self-preservation, and he didn't know what a cyborg was. So he's like,
right,
death or cyborg, I pick cyborg. And then they're, you know, they're getting him ready, and he's like, so what's a cyborg?
Yeah, by the way. So they operate on him with MODOK kind of throwing the final switch, and we also find out that the key ingredient to what they're doing is of MODOK's devising. So he is pretty much responsible for the cyborg project.
Mm-hmm.
And they expose this man and convert him. They convert him into a cyborg, but he doesn't look like my idea of cyborg.
No.
He comes out bigger, probably four or five times the size of a normal man, all covered in the same kind of coating that looks like what the Silver Surfer is covered in.
Yeah.
He's got some shorts on and a pointy head like a bullet.
Yeah, the head thing. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. He doesn't have any ears, I don't think. No discernible nose. He does have eyes and lips. He has 5 fingers, 2 arms and 2 legs. No idea how many toes. So it's, you know, they're trying to do something, yeah, but calling it a cyborg, I was kind of, eh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, yeah.
Again, it's not my idea. Maybe in 1970, this was their idea of a cyborg.
Exactly. And see, that goes back to the statement I made for the previous comment or comic. It's like, it's a glimpse into what they thought of then.
Right, right. So you know, that's what we have. That's going to be our big bad, Cyborg. We cut back to Captain America, who I guess it's a different day, you know, from when he was attacked. It's some point later, and he goes to a SHIELD secret entrance. These are, at this point, all around the city of New York. SHIELD has different bases, and they're all hidden in nondescript shops and things. This one happens to be a barbershop. Yeah, this one's in a barbershop. He goes down into the base, and this is the main base, or maybe he just knew Fury was going to be here. Either way, he's looking for Nick Fury, finds him at this base, and has some words with him. Now, this aspect of the story I do not like at all. Before even having to talk about a thumbs up or thumbs down, the way that they're treating Agent 13.
Okay, see, I was wondering.
The way that Cap mm-hmm. is treating Agent 13. Mm-hmm. Fury is, you know, I can kind of understand Fury's point of view, kind of. But that whole storyline
mm-hmm.
is so chauvinistic.
Oh, my God, yes.
No ifs, ands, or buts. No hiding it. No apologizing for it. No, it's just, bam, it is there.
Yep.
And what it is Cap is romantically involved with Agent 13, who is, and I get them mixed up, Sharon Carter.
Yeah, Sharon.
Granddaughter to Peggy Carter, who may be in the geek zeitgeist right now because of a little TV show that has recently started. So they're romantically involved. She is an agent of SHIELD. Her moniker is Agent 13. SHIELD's best, definitely one of their best operatives. This is from Nick Fury. But Cap is concerned because her designation puts her in the field, and putting her in the field puts her in harm's way. And he doesn't want her let me rephrase that. Cap wants to protect her. In his mind, he wants to protect her. So to protect her, he gets Fury, who owes him out the wazoo, I'm sure, to pull her from active duty and put her on a desk. Okay, if that's not bad enough, Sharon just goes along with it, vis-a-vis, if that's what you want, my dearest. You don't have to. Oh no, that's all she says right mm-hmm. there. It just leaves that hanging. Mm-hmm. She speaks like this again later on in the book. Now, I don't know. Maybe it'll turn up later on that this character isn't Sharon. Somebody has taken her place or something. But if this is actually Sharon Carter, this is terrible to do to this character.
Yeah.
It's a terrible way for Cap to treat her. By extension, a terrible way for Nick to treat her. Yeah, I didn't like this storyline at all.
No.
It drops out of the story here for now, but then pops up at the very end, and yeah, it will again. So I'll revisit this. So Nick Fury agrees. You know, he puts her on desk duty, and Cap and Peggy walk away. In essence, Nick telling the two of them to go get a room. He flips on his monitoring device, which is what he was doing, and he sees Cyborg as the cyborg breaks into a savings bank and starts to pillage the place rather handily. He walks up to a foot to 2 foot, maybe, thick safe door and just pushes it into the safe. Mm-hmm. Just like you would push a regular door open. He pushes that big safe door in. Cap and Sharon see it and, you know, are going to go out. Sharon says, Colonel, it won't take me long to reach the area. Cap says, Sharon, have you forgotten your promise? So here, this is just really weird.
Yeah.
Sharon is being Sharon. She's being Agent 13. You know, this is her character. Colonel, it won't take me long to reach that area. This is a huge frickin' cyborg. Okay, she just saw it rip a safe out of the wall. Mm-hmm. But she's like, you know, put me in, coach. Cap says, well, you know, now you said you wouldn't do that. They're there. Mm-hmm. And she responds, oh, I'm sorry, dear. I'm to leave the danger to you from now on.
So
somebody deserves being jerked up short for writing that character like that. That's horribly disappointing. So I'm sorry. It didn't wait until the end of the book to pop up again. It popped up again right there.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to call a precedent and say I don't want to finish the book.
If this is the way it's going, I certainly can see that. Did you finish it?
I did. You know, that's what I have to do for the show. But
normally you would have put it down.
Oh, that first time where it was like, you know, oh well, I'll just leave the danger to you, and you know, I'd have been like, I mean, I was shocked even for then, you know, because you know, it's like 1970. It's like that was supposed to be a revolution of sorts, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure starting in the late 60s, so they would be like right in the middle of it. And
to be honest, and to show how displeased I am with how they wrote the book, I don't want to review it.
Okay.
I mean, you can continue. I mean, obviously, yeah. But it's just this is just such a.
It's not good. Let's see. A couple things happen that have to be pulled out at least.
Okay.
They go off. Cap goes to look for the cyborg, because by the time they can mobilize anything, Cyborg's gone. Agent Carter, as is her new, I guess it would be, is it an MOS? Is that the letters for it? Whatever the Army's designation, MOS? I'm not sure what the letters are, but her new job. She's manning communications now.
Yeah.
And Nick goes off on his own mission, says he's taken off. Sharon gets a call from Nick to send Cap to a particular location, which she relays the information to Cap, but then can't communicate with Cap to change that. I don't understand how that worked.
I didn't either. It's like, where was any sort of communication device that any Avenger ever had in the history of Avengers?
Well, not only that, but right now he's on a mission, if not for, then with S.H.I.E.L.D.
So he should have some sort of communication device.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know what happened there. It doesn't show her communicating with him, but what it does show, after she gets this information from Nick to tell Cap, she then sees Nick, and he tells her, you know, well, whatever this other thing is, I don't know what you're talking about. So she realizes that she has given Cap information that is false, probably leading him into a trap, but now she can't relay that to him. So she got him moving to that location, but now can't recall him. I have no idea how that works, but the reason is so that she can jump in the car and go to this location herself to intercept Cap.
The reason, not her reason, but the writer's reason.
Right, the story reason that occurred, which the story reason that occurred, we will see at the very end.
Yeah.
She gets there. Cyborg is there. Cap is not. She is on the losing end. Cap gets there. Cap rescues her, which that's not, to me, that's not too bad. She was pretty severely outmanned in my mind by the Cyborg. Cap rescuing her, to me, is not that big a deal. So that I didn't think was too big a deal. But in here is something, and I need to point it out because it's poignant. To defeat the Cyborg, Cap uses his shield and he hacks into a water pipe. Very much put me in mind of like King Arthur swinging Excalibur at an enemy.
That would be, yeah.
And if you dig into Excalibur a little bit, you see that there are inscriptions on either side of the sword and some other things that were written that Arthur was able to do with the sword. Very much put you in mind of things that I have seen Cap do with the shield, mm-hmm. reflecting light, leading in front of him, holding it back, using it in different – all of these different things can – without too much of a stretch, be applied to things that the legendary Excalibur were able to do or was done with King Arthur.
Exactly.
Now, that is particularly pertinent, and I pull that out because Toothgnasher on Twitter suggested Excalibur as our word of the show.
There you go.
So, thank you, Toothgnasher, for that. Appreciate that.
Thank you very much, and I take my glove off, and I smack, and I throw it on the ground, and I say, I challenge you to do better.
Ah. So, Cap defeats Cyborg by that method, the water, and then he electrocutes him and all this stuff. Yeah. Saves Peggy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's not – okay. But here, at the end of this story
mm-hmm. –
she's rescued. She comes up to Captain America much more as the love interest than as someone that was just rescued.
Right. Or as the agent.
Or as an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. who was rescued, even more so.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the first thing that Cap says to her is, you and Fury lied to me. She said, what? Cap said, you both promised no more combat assignments for you. If you'd break your word so quickly, so casually, how could I ever trust you again? Okay, see, drop the book and walks off the reading stage.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That is terrible, terrible writing for that character. That's a terrible way to introduce this wedge they obviously want to introduce in their relationship, or a wedge between Cap and Fury, which there have been wedges used very frequently to separate the two of them. So, I mean, there are other ways to do it because it gets done. But that's just bad. Stan. That's bad. Dog, that's bad. I'll jump in here and say, man, I like Cap and I like the 70s Cap, and I do not like Stan Lee's writing in this book. If he was the one that wrote this, the Gene Colan art is cool. I like the art. Give the art a thumbs up. Give the book a thumbs down for that horrible writing of Agent 13. Your turn.
I'm trying to find where it says who did what with the book. Oh, wait, first page. Okay, so produced by Stan Lee and Gene Colan.
Yeah, they could have wrote it together. Gene Colan could have wrote it, but Stan wanted to put his name on it. You can't tell. Even if it said Stan Lee wrote it, my impression is that these later years, Stan Lee writing something was rather dubious.
Mm.
They would come together, he and a creator or creators. He would throw out an idea and say, okay, run with that, and he would leave the room.
Yeah.
And that would be his writing credit. So it's like, you know. So I don't know. This does not feel like other Stan Lee Caps that I've
read. No, this actually, I mean, I was left surprised. I'll just use the word surprised that – the characters acted the way they did. I mean, you know, I haven't read, you know, like a multitude of comics, but I guess I can say at this point that I do have some experience, and this doesn't feel like anything that we've gone over in the past at all.
No.
I'm not sure, of course, you know, what the circumstances were, who was ultimately responsible for it, but this is quite honestly one of the biggest disappointments.
Yeah.
I mean, just that I've read, honestly, it really is.
Yeah, there were Cap and Peggy, and to some extent Fury. No. All seemed very out of character to me.
Well, they did. I mean,
just very out of
character. I mean, if we want to, you know, if we want to look at that aspect, yeah, they were definitely out of character. Which means that someone had their own agenda in writing this story so that they could introduce an arc of their own devising.
Maybe. I think I would prefer to think that someone's idea was to break these three up, you know, put a wedge between everybody.
Yes, and that would be the arc.
This was just a very, very heavy-handed way of doing it. Okay, I'm sorry. I thought that you were implying someone was trying to speak about their thoughts of the male-female
No.
Interaction at this time.
No.
Okay.
No, I'm saying that someone did a piss-poor job of introducing a new story arc by doing something so just so poorly, so unquestionably poorly. It was like, well, what do we do? I don't know. Just do this and make her say this and make him do this and make him do this, and then we'll go on with the story.
Yeah, just break them up. I don't care.
Exactly. And you know what I have to say? I don't have a thumbs down or a thumbs up for this issue. This issue is a joke.
Yeah.
It's a joke. Like you said, not only are they out of character, and yeah, for our show, that's a thing, but the way they wrote, the way they wrote the characters, and the fact that they made it such a chauvinistic and male dominant, sexist, issue, and just she had no brain. She was subservient, not subservient.
Yeah.
She was the android in this issue.
Yeah.
And okay, so like you said, maybe this is, you know, in future issues, it's going to turn out that, oh well, this wasn't really her. It was a what are they called? A real life decoy or an action life decoy?
LMD, life model
decoy. Yeah, life model decoy. Okay. So maybe that's the fact. But
the real Peggy is out on a mission.
Right.
That's so secret that, yeah, that would be nice.
but the thing is that what they have just done is not introduced any suspicion to that at all, and presented this as factual storyline.
Right. As her, as Cap. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, but here's the thing. Say she is a life model decoy?
LMD. Yeah. Yeah.
But Cap still responded the same way.
Yeah. That doesn't explain him.
Exactly. You know, she may be, you know, that alternative, but he, that's what he wants. That's how he wants things to be. You know, it's that I don't want you to be in harm's way, but it's okay for me to be. And she's like, oh, and that's what I want everything to be.
And see, that would be, I would expect that of Steve Rogers because of how anachronistic the character is.
Okay, I mean, I can,
you know, so
his views given where he originated.
Right, right. So, but that, there, you know, there's a point there where, yes, but 1970s.
Well, that's, you know, exactly the thing.
Don't do that anymore. That, so
I mean, it's like, oh well, okay, wait, I have to learn how to be now,
which is, you know, is part of his story.
Yeah, it's
so
it is.
You would expect that,
but and okay, now going along with that, let's say that she is a life model decoy, but then we have Nick, who is still, oh, well, if that's how y'all want it, then we're going to do it. And why don't you get a room and get the hell out of my office? And, you know, it's like,
yeah.
But so, I mean, there's just, there's, you don't have, well, one, you don't have any consistency with anything that I've read before.
No, true.
But then you also don't have fail safes. It's like, okay, Cap is going to be a certain way, but oh wait, no,
right.
But that but failed. Right. Okay, but let's say that she is this. So then, but no, but then that but failed because
right,
Nick.
Yeah, no, you don't have that. So.
And but Nick is but then Nick is what? Nick is compromised in some fashion as well.
Also, yeah. So all three of them are suffering from something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really hope and I really think that someone was given the mandate of end point. I don't care how you get there.
Yeah.
And so somebody just stomped the characters and said, okay, we're there.
Yeah, but that's still no excuse.
Well, no. I mean, but I would prefer to say that it was bad for that reason, rather than saying that this is something that they actually consciously wanted the characters to do, to go through.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I have no evidence for or against any of the above, so.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely, next issue or next interaction between Cap and Peggy,
yeah.
That will be the, you know.
I refuse to give a thumbs up or thumbs down, and okay. I'm just going to say that this issue was shit.
Do better, guys.
No, not do better. Be better.
That's just sitting here thinking, not even in the 40s and 50s Golden Age stuff that I've read, the male characters had a propensity to be dismissive of females.
Mm-hmm.
But that did not have the feeling of the way that Peggy was treated and reacted in this issue to me when I've read that. So, you know, I can't even say, well, you know, it feels like Golden Age books that I used to read, because it's even more heavy-handed
than
that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have that 40s or 50s, you know, like, oh, gee, golly, I'm the man. You know, no, it was more of the, I'm going to go and I'm going to do the dangerous part, and I can't stand the thought of you being in danger as an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I don't care about your career. You're going to a desk. Okay, right, Captain. Yeah. Nick, are you okay with that? I just want you to get a room.
Yeah, it's. That bad was reinforced by all characters.
Yeah.
It wasn't just one character that was mishandled it was just the three main characters in the book were just, they were way off base.
Yeah, and then at the end, you know, it's like when you find out, for whatever stupid reason, she can't communicate with him, and apparently no one can to stop him, because, you know, communications between agents or superheroes is evidently not possible on a S.H.I.E.L.D. level or an Avengers level. Well, she's going to go there to save him because she loves him. And, okay, stuff goes down, and she, you know, deals with something that's basically above her pay grade in, you know, ability. And Cap comes in, and he's like, okay, well, yeah, I can deal with this, and I do, and this is how I do it. But then he's like, you lied to me. And if you can lie to me so easily now, how can I trust you with anything ever? And she's like,
Yeah, she's like nothing.
Yeah, she doesn't do anything. She's like, no, you don't understand. I came here to save your ass.
That's it, you know. It's like, dude, quit being an asshat.
Exactly. It's like, it's.
Hang on a second.
It's like, no. One, Fury had nothing to do with this, because I called Fury, and Fury's like, I don't even know what you're talking about, but I gotta go,
right?
Because I've got something else. No, that never, you know, that never was mentioned, and like, you know, it was like, I came here knowing that this android is going to kick my ass. And here I am, and I'm still alive. And by the way, thank you. I do appreciate that. However, I came here for you. No, Cap's like, oh, you have betrayed.
Yeah. It was. And, you know, you guys listening, you know, we obviously what we're saying is our own opinions. But to get, you know, to be able to form your opinion about this, you need to just take a couple minutes and just read that book.
Yeah.
And see, it's, you know, yeah, it's Captain America. Yeah, it's Peggy Carter, and it's Nick, and a couple others pop up in there. Agent Stillwell, who I think you'll recognize from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yeah. I think they've dropped his name.
But also,
Drawn was, what was his name? It wasn't Boomer. It was, the red haired guy.
Dum Dum?
Yeah. It was Dum Dum
Dugan,
yeah. Yeah. He's drawn in, so you've got that character as well.
Yeah, so, you know.
Who doesn't say anything?
Just read this, see if you can find it in a collection. Again, it was issue 124. It's not Cap.
No.
I don't know, you know.
But also, it's not this company either.
No, not at this time. It hasn't been. No. So,
I mean, it was like, it's like they were like, okay, someone write something, and the first one that gets it back to us, we'll print it. You know.
Well, and you know that as far as the process goes, it's like, wow, no one anywhere objected to any of that.
Yeah, that is.
It all got pushed through every separate segment of the process.
Yeah.
Lettering, colors, some editor, printer. No one anywhere said, wow, is this really what you guys meant?
Yeah, you know what? We're just a little itty-bitty podcast, but Stan Lee, can you elaborate?
I mean, if he could even remember.
I was going to say, do you even remember? And if you do, can you like just fill us in on why?
Or Gene Colan.
Okay.
He drew it. If he did more than draw it, why? And if all you did is draw it, why did you not?
Why'd you put your name to it?
So, yeah, that's just – okay. So that's a very unfortunate book, guys.
Yeah.
I'll just say that as a final.
I'm saying boycott it.
Okay, let's see. We got next episode. We've got lined up Chamber of Darkness 4 and Daredevil 63.
Ooh, Daredevil, okay.
Yeah, Gene Colan may be drawing Daredevil right now also. I don't remember.
All right. Now, didn't we have a mention on Twitter because of a award that we gave out?
Oh, as a matter of fact, we did. I don't know if I can quickly call it up, but if I recall correctly – we handed out our first No Prize to Professor Allen.
Yes, we did.
And he was very appreciatory on Twitter.
He was, as a matter of fact.
When he listened to that episode.
Yep. Which was funny. And really quickly, I guess, because the show's going a bit long today. Ed and I were both online at the same time. And I got notification, and I was for Twitter, and I use Twitter very rarely. Well, very little, not rarely, but very little. And so when I get a Twitter notification, I'm like, "Well, what is this?" And so you know, I go to my phone and I look it up, and I see Professor Allen says, my first No Prize. I am deeply honored. And my first thought, and this is what's funny, my first thought was, hey, someone actually really does listen to the show. My second thought was, hey, that's cool that he liked it. And so I went over to Facebook and I messaged Ed and I was like, did you just get that? I didn't mention anything else. I had no specifics. I was just, did you just get that? And this is what's funny. Ed was like, yeah, period, enter. proof that people, or proof that someone actually does listen to the show. I was like, that's exactly what I was thinking. So, Professor Allen, thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for being vocal about it. And it was our pleasure to give out the very first No Prize of the show to you. I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, wanted or not, that you get another one, but you keep striving and we'll keep doing.
That sounds fair.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, that was funny. It was like, yeah. And I it's not like, what?
Right. It was like, did you just get that? Get what?
No, because it was rapid fire. I got notice, read it. Did you just get that? I was like, yeah. So I might not have been referring to what you were.
Right, but you were.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I did see that. Yeah, I saw, you know, yeah. So it was.
And it's so funny because, like I said, my first thought was, see, oh, my God, people do listen. At least one person listens to the show. And that's exactly what you said. You were like, see, we have proof that at least someone listens to the show. And I'm like, that's exactly what I was thinking.
How about this? I don't believe on the podcast you have ever given out your Twitter handle.
Who, mine?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. And yet.
No, I don't believe you have. But yet he found it, included the correct one.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are others out there. And yeah, so it's like a little bit of extra work there.
Oh, yeah. He went search. My question is, was it because we gave the no prize, or was it because we mentioned last episode that I was a photographer? Because in season two, that's last episode was the first time we'd ever mentioned that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Or is he just that creepy?
I don't know. He's a professor after all, so maybe, you know, maybe research is his thing.
It could be.
And he's very well read. He has a book blog where he puts out his own reviews on like real prose novels. Mm-hmm. And on occasion he'll drop like a trade paperback or a single issue of a comic book in there. Mm-hmm. And he does a podcast centering primarily on prose, but they will also delve into other written works as well. So,
like amateurs or things like that? Prose versus amateurs.
Oh, I see. You got me with that one.
Goodbye. Yeah, it's a zinger. I would like actually to take this opportunity, Professor Allen, to say that I did see your post about your personal winners, I guess, for
yes,
podcasts.
Yes. For yeah.
And I do have to say this one thing, sir. Unless I missed it, I didn't see us mentioned anywhere.
No, I don't think we made any cuts.
And sir, with all due respect, I am a little disappointed.
We don't know how many he listens to.
No, and it, but it's, you know, I
don't know. Maybe it's tough to make the cut.
Well, I mean, first round picks. Okay, I get we didn't make the first round picks, but he did have runners ups, or runners up, or runner ups.
Yeah, wherever the S goes. Yeah.
And I looked at those when I realized that we didn't make the first round, and then I was even more disappointed, sir.
That makes me think of one more thing here before we give our closing information.
Yes.
There's a podcast that started that I will be a part of, Professor Allen will be a part of, and some other podcasting associates of ours will be, that is going through, and it started the first Wednesday of January – and every Wednesday a new episode will come out talking about the top 75 all-time Marvel stories as suggested and voted on by the fans and compiled by Marvel in 2014. They asked and they made a list and published it. Off the top of my head, I don't know where they put it, but it's Marvel's top 75 stories. All the podcasters have gotten together and have picked individual stories, and for that week, that is the story that they talk about, and that show comes out every Wednesday. So this coming Wednesday should be, what, 5-4-3-2, like the 72nd most popular?
Okay.
Because they're counting backwards from 75 to 1. So off the top of my head, looking at the list, I don't remember where the stories occurred or, you know, if Bronze Age stories are going to be in there. I would suggest that there would have to be some, perhaps not as many as there really should be. I thought that the list was a lot more recent heavy.
I'm betting a number of them are probably from the 90s.
But that's my own, you know, again, that's my own opinion. I did vote when I saw that it was open for voting, so I did input. But if you guys are interested in something like that, just Google Marvel 75 Top Stories. There is an open Facebook group for the podcast that you can join, and all the podcast hosts are a member of the group. So we're talking about the episodes as they come out. The recorders, the actual host will be there. You can interact with them. Just kind of a cool thing that one of the podcasters came up with and asked around and got enough people to do the stories without too much of an overload on any one person. And so it'll be coming out until what, the middle of next year?
Yeah.
75.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's some more Marvel goodness if you want a company-centric podcast.
There you go.
If you want to get in touch with us, guys, you can do as Professor Allen and Toothnasher did and look up Marvel Bronze Age on Twitter, yep. All one word. We're on Facebook and Google Plus.
We are.
The Marvel Bronze Age is the Gmail address.
That's, yeah, that's if you want to send us an email. We like those too.
And then the website is bigtimenoise.com/Marvel Bronze Age. And we are part of the Comic Book Noise Network, which is part of the Deliberate Noise Network.
Yes, we're noisy.
Derek Coward overviews all of that stuff. So
yeah, we haven't mentioned Big D in a while, man.
No, that's true. I've been slightly remiss.
You have.
Actually, all of this season, I think it hasn't.
No, I don't think that we have mentioned Mr. Derek Coward at all.
So thanks a lot, Derek, for the behind-the-scenes stuff that you do, because obviously you haven't been on one of the shows, so it's not there, so it would be behind.
Is that the scenes.
Right. That's how that works.
But is that something for a future episode?
I don't know. He's much more a fan of single voice than ensemble podcasts.
I'm thinking just, cameo.
Just as a personal preference.
Right.
Well, now that might be something. Get him to talk about one of the books and insert that as the coverage, one episode of that title.
Yeah.
I've not thought about that. I'll have to feel him out and see if he has a favorite book from this era or something like that and see what we can do. That's a good idea. That's a very good idea.
Yep.
I'll make a note.
Okay, make a note.
All right, guys. With that, two more weeks. As I said, Chamber of Darkness 4 and Daredevil 63. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right, peace.
The Marvel Bronze Age podcast is a Teal production, and as such is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Non-Derivatives 3.0 Unported license. The song Super Freaks is provided and performed by the Hammerheads.